Welcome once again to the chat room. Nice to have your company. This is, as I keep saying, the fastest 28 minutes on television. We'll pick a huge topic, an enormous topic, and I was going to say skate over it. No, dig into it for 28 minutes, or the man who does the digging, the Dean of Sydney for the Kensington.
I'm glad we're doing digging, not skating. I'm no good on skating, but digging I'm for, but we can't dig very far in 28 minutes, can we?
It's amazing what we can do, though.
Yep.
Let's have a go at the topic of a multicultural society. It's been in the headlines. There are people been debating it. I mean, we live in a multicultural society, so we are told. I mean, the people who introduced this concept of multiculturalism, what did they want? What did they have in mind?
I don't know, and it's one of the ones that kind of snuck up on me. I don't think I was ever invited to sign a referendum saying I wanted Australia to stop being monocultural and become multicultural. It just is what some people somewhere said should happen, and then over a period of time, it became politically incorrect to say you didn't like it.
Right. So what did... Well, we don't know what they had in mind. No. But have a guess. What do you think they were aiming at? What did they want our society to be like?
Yeah, peaceful, harmonious, open, welcoming. They wanted it so that in a tolerant society where everybody could have equal share of the justice and prosperity of the society, and where racism would be excluded in particular.
So they wanted tolerance in their sense, just everybody would accept everybody else and everyone would be nice.
Everyone would be nice and everyone would get on well with their neighbour.
Right. Doesn't work, does it?
No.
No. Why doesn't it work? What's wrong with
you met my neighbour. No, he's a nice person. Well, actually, they're not.
Actually, love your neighbour as yourself is very hard. It's
very
work,
hard.
Isn't it?
Yes. So love your enemies, it'll kill them. But people are sinful to start with, and our sinfulness is often expressed in our cultures and reinforced in our cultures, and we do have tribal mentalities. We do like to go with the herd.
We belong to this group.
I belong to this group, not that group, and part of the way I identify this group is because I'm not like that group, and so I will always be over against them. It's all very well to say everyone should be tolerant, but what if your culture is an intolerant culture?
But we tolerate your intolerant culture because it's tolerant of us to tolerate your intolerance. I'm sorry I started that sentence.
Well,
you know
that's
I mean.
Right. I know what you mean, because the end result of the course is the intolerant wins.
Because they'll be more firm. They'll stand for their...
They'll stand for their guns, and so therefore everybody has to go along with them because they will not tolerate everybody else.
Given that that's the reality, it is nevertheless the case that anything other than multiculturalism is, as you said, thought to be unthinkable these days.
Yes, and nearly all the alternatives are just as bad.
So what are the alternatives people are frightened of that they want to avoid?
Assimilation. Assimilation means that all the minority groups have to become like the majority group, whether they want to or not, whether the majority group's got it right or not, everyone has to become like them. Well, that's unjust and unfair. I mean, if you wish to conduct your life in a different pattern, you wish to live in a different way, why should you have to go along with the majority?
So it's a kind of, it's a very simplistic way of looking at things. It's almost as though you look at migrants coming off the boat being issued with their blue singlet and their hat with cork dangling off it, you know, and saying, fit in or go away again.
Fit in or go, you've got to talk English. Mustn't talk any foreign language on the street, you see. And so we have this desire either to make everybody the same, or that's really inhospitable. And so we say, well, then you can all be different. But how do you hold a society together when everybody's different? I mean, take speaking English on the streets. When I was a child, if anybody did speak anything other than English on the streets, I mean, in the bus and things like that, I mean, I heard people chastise total strangers, talk English here, you know, and really be quite rude to people. On the other hand, the multiculturalists don't really want us to educate every child in their mother language. I mean, there's 140 or so languages in one of our suburbs of Sydney, which I won't mention which one, doesn't matter which one, but there's 140 different languages spoken at home as the first language. What's the school teacher supposed to do? What's the local school supposed to do?
So practicality takes over.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. So we teach everybody English. And we teach in English. Now, if there was one big alternative home language, Spanish, some parts of the Americas, this is the way, then you say, oh, no, we teach Spanish here, and we teach in Spanish here because this is a Spanish-speaking. But then you create the ghetto, don't you? Then you create the Quebec of Canada, where suddenly you cross a line and now you're talking French, and you cross the other line, you're back talking English. And the hostility and tensions that exist that way. So do you have assimilation, or do you have the melting pot? We all come in together, and then after a while, something new is going to come out. Some kind of new culture develops called the Australian culture.
Well, that was Les Murray's argument. He called it the common pot. You don't bring everyone here and make them like us, but they all contribute to the common pot. So what we are changes by all of us being together. That, yes. As kind of an alternative That's to right. multiculturalism.
And it's, and it was the great American dream. But of course, it still doesn't work. The majority determines which bit of the pot they're willing to accept as yes. change or not change. It's not necessarily for the better that we're going to come out at the end of the day. The whole thing is in some ways a form of social engineering. We want migrants in our country. We have cleverly devised that they come from everywhere so that we don't get too much of a ghettoed minority,
a
powerful minority group. So it looks like we're being generous and open to everybody, but we're not. And we know that the first generation have been given a green light. You can stay just the way you are and live in Australia, because we know that the second generation will be educated in our schools in English, and the third generation won't even know the home first generation's language.
I once had a politician tell me about the three generation thing. He said the first generation have to live together to feel comfortable. The third generation, he said, are fully assimilated and they're completely Australian. The people in the middle have got an uncomfortable life with a foot in both camps. But he said that's what happens with every migrant group. Now, that's what he thought as a politician was the normal process.
That's what they were doing. That's what many of our leaders are doing consciously, specifically, intentionally. But they talk multicultural talk.
Right.
Because the first generation...
So multicultural becomes a mask to disguise that process.
Yes, it's just a three-generational assimilation. Now, I'm not saying assimilation's good either. You know, you've got to be careful how you get branded in this, because you get branded very easily as racist and the rest of it. I'm just saying, look at the reality. The reality of most multicultural programs is a three-generational assimilation, which is not what people are saying it is.
So it's just a mask for something else. What about being a contradiction in terms? I mean, you couldn't go on being a multicultural society and be a society, I presume.
Right. What is the connection between a culture and a society? I mean...
Pretty much the same thing.
It really is. It needn't be. A society can be a governmental organisation and a culture the way they live. I mean, you can make up words any way you like, so I'm told by Mr. Dodson and Lewis Carroll. But really, a culture is a society. And so to have a multicultural society is to have a contradiction in the heart of our life.
A multi-society society.
It's not going to work. One family has certain rules, attitudes, values about marriage. The one next door has completely different ones. Well, one culture has a view as to this is criminal. The other has the view this is not criminal. There are cultures in the world that don't believe in private property. So if you see anything lying around, you can pick it up because there's only common property. Well, you can't have that as a value and laws against stealing. For them, it's not stealing. It's just picking up part of the common property. For those of us who believe that there is such a thing as private property, it is stealing. Very hard to have those two cultures as one culture. And so you wind up, do we have more than one legal system?
Well, that must be where it breaks down, because we may have a multicultural society, don't have a multi-legal system society. I mean, if I'm stopped for doing 80 in a 60 zone, I can't say, I'm sorry, that's not my law, I've got another law that I belong to.
Well, why not? I mean, ultimately, the logic of a multicultural society, that's what you do.
So hence the suggestions that Indigenous communities should follow tribal laws and Muslim communities have Sharia law and so on.
And... Friday is the public holiday in one culture. Saturday is in another, Sunday is in another, and then there are other people who don't have any special day.
And there are Aussies who think they'd like all 3 days off.
All 3 years. The longer weekend, because we're a multicultural nation, is not what's done. So what then our new culture is, the melting pot culture, is money. Because it's the lowest common denominator.
Right.
It's the thing that we all agree about, is money. Whether you're Jewish or Muslim or Christian or Buddhist, if you're an Australian, you're here for the money.
And so for a better lifestyle, they say.
Well, so they say, yes, for the money. And so that's the lowest common denominator we can agree about. And all our laws and all our culture are just about who has access to the money when. Well, that's a culture that I really don't want to live in. I prefer to live in, you know, a religious culture I disagreed with than a materialist culture that I disagreed with. I mean, if that's the highest good that we can tell people, that we've got fair distribution of money, we're actually in a Marxist culture.
Yes, or we're in a society where everyone's here for the same purpose, to be as prosperous as possible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is a very barren, sterile culture. And yet, that's the one thing we can agree upon. So we can't get public companies to sponsor anything that has a religious character to it, because, say, there are members of the public company whose money is involved here. And so they can only sponsor things that are non-religious. And so it goes on and becomes, well, it becomes a culture that is really unpleasant. We lose our weekends. I mean, the solution to whether we'll do Friday, Saturday or Sunday is...
None of them.
None of them.
Yep.
You go make money any day.
So we no longer have a common day off when families can get together.
That's right. And the vast majority may be Christian, or Christianised in the loose sense of the word. So 70-80% may be ticking the box, say they want to be Christian, but they can't enjoy their day off because they're at 2% who might be Jewish and who want to have Saturday off, or 5% or whatever it is who might be Muslim and want to have their day off. And so on the grounds that we can't give it to anybody, we give it to nobody.
So multiculturalism is in the first place a mask hiding what politicians are really doing, the three-generation assimilation. It's also unworkable because you can't have a multi-society society and it breaks down in legal areas. What about when you come to faith, what happens? Does a multicultural society mean we need a multi-religion society in which we have to tick a box that says every religion is equally true?
Well, there's always this shift between tolerating the alternative and relativistically accepting the alternative. So it's one thing to say, I disagree with you, but I'm glad you're here as my neighbour and we can work together and all these other things. That's tolerating our differences. But relativism says, well, you've got as much right to be, you know, you're as right as I am. Your God is your God, my God is my God, and we all believe, and so it doesn't matter.
So if I believe I'll be judged after death, and you believe you'll be reincarnated after death, I'll be judged, you'll be reincarnated, it all works.
Yes, or nothing. Yes, and so relativism is a great shift from tolerance. Tolerance actually says, I'm still right and you're wrong.
But we're going to get on.
Yeah. I'm not going to hold that against you. I'm not going to refuse to trade with you because of it. It may mean I won't share a ham roll with you.
I'm going to be sensitive to the fact that you won't like a ham roll.
But I tolerate you and hopefully you tolerate me. And so the fact that I've got a pig on the barbecue, you won't complain too much.
Right. Okay, so we can be tolerant without being relativistic. But the very fact that our society is labelled as multicultural and we're told we have to accept everyone as being equal, has that had an effect on the way Christianity is seen in our culture?
Yes, because it's now seen as one of many alternatives and not the one that gave rise to this culture. Now, into that, of course, is a complete absurdity. That is, Hindus don't really believe in Westerners becoming Hindus because Hinduism is being Indian. It's not really a religion like Christianity, which is an evangelistic religion, or like Islam, which is an evangelistic religion. It's a national characteristic. It's a way of being Indian rather than something you go out and persuade other people to become. Whereas and likewise with Judaism. Judaism is something you're born into. It's not something that you go and preach to other people. And so it has a different attitude to how you live beside people than something like Christianity, which has the obligation of telling everybody about the Lord Jesus Christ. So religion becomes different. Now, at this point, our multicultural society comes out of Christianity.
So that's actually where deeply buried the assumptions have come from.
Yes, because you don't get multiculturalism in a Muslim country. I mean, you don't get it in India, because every Indian is supposed to be Hindu. Even if they became Christian, they're still Hindu. It's just a relativistic acceptance of everything. But Saudi Arabia doesn't have multiculturalism, nor is it likely to. They're not interested in letting everybody come in and tolerating other people, nor treating them all equally before the law. That is not... It's a very Christian idea to accept the stranger, the foreigner, and to accept him as a full member as much as he can enter into it in society. And so that you have the same legal rights for work, for housing, for food, for justice in the land, comes out of a Christian perception that all humans are created in the image of God.
So this is actually grown out of what the thing that William Temple, a long time ago, called the cut flower civilization. These people have cut themselves off from the roots of Christianity, don't want to know Christ, but because there's 2,000 years of Christianity behind them, they're making these assumptions.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Yes, thank you. And they're still the flowers, but they've just cut them.
And the flowers will die sooner or later.
And the flowers die over time because you don't have the nourishment that comes that keeps them going. But it is Christian. See, this is one of the traps. See? Multiculturalism is an expression, a particular expression, not a very good one necessarily, but an expression of Christianity. Because Christians are always, and it's in the Old Testament, so Jews should be too, concerned for the refugee, for the alien, for the other. Hospitality is one of our high Christian virtues.
It's a command.
It's a command to be hospitable. Yeah. And the word hospitable actually means loving the stranger, is the root of the word. And so we are concerned for others, especially displaced people, especially people. And if you invite them into your culture, into your land, then you need to invite them in to look after them as they are. And so it's very Christian to be multicultural. But to think from being multicultural, accepting others, tolerating others, you can then move to changing the mainstream culture and doing away with it and getting rid of its Christian element and come up with a melting pot, you just wind up with money.
Right, at the lowest possible
denominator. The lowest common denominator.
I don't know whether I'm going to take you somewhere you weren't going to go, but let me ask about the connection between Christianity and culture. Because the impression is that there is a Christian culture.
Yeah.
It's the impression that non-Christians have.
Yeah.
You know, Western culture, Western civilization, that's the Christian culture. What is the real relationship between Christian faith and culture?
Well, culture is a tricky word anyway, isn't it? It can be used in terms of high culture, ballet, drama. It can be used of, this is the way the people in this tribe do things. The tribe could be a nation or it could be just a family. Every family has its culture. Every social grouping has a distinctive way of doing things. So the family of Jensens will do things differently to the family of Richards. They're minor things, they're fairly unimportant things, so the families Richards and Jensens can go together and have a Richards-Jensens culture as well, if we want to. And every time there's a marriage, there is a joining together of two family cultures and the creation of another one. The more those two cultures are similar to each other, the more they can assimilate to each other. The more different they are, the more difficult it is to make a marriage out of that couple. Not impossible, but the more difficult it becomes. Now, there are some cultures which are just ways of living, ways of relating, ways of interrelating and interconnecting with each other. There are certain cultures which, in order to be retained, require them to live separately.
The only way they can be coherent is if they're cut off from everyone else.
Yes, or marked out as identifiably different. They could live in the same country, but they've got to put markers around themselves to protect their integrity.
Wear different clothes, live differently.
Yes, eat different foods, marry within only, and things like that. And so to make up a country of lots of different cultures, well, it's very hard for the integrity to be kept. in these different cultures. I mean, you see it classically in that North American, the Amish people. Right? There is a little culture within a wider culture that has retained its own language, its own way of doing things. Its own... But then, lo and behold, they find out that several of them, the younger generation, have been using this distinctiveness and the generosity of the wider culture of America to allow them to exist to smuggle drugs across the border to Mexico.
Only in horse-drawn vehicles.
Only in horse-drawn vehicles. And so you then say, well, what right have they got to benefit from being in this nation without paying any of the dues to this nation? Because they want to live a separate life within the nation. Yeah, polygamy is a classic. Should you allow polygamy or not? It's a very difficult issue. The Mormons traditionally did, and the Americans said no. The Muslims want to, but the Westerners won't let them. Now, you can say, well, what the man does in his own four-bedroom house next door is his business. But on the other hand, his children go to schools, his social service is paid for by us, he has four families. Furthermore, rich people, rich men can afford four wives, which means poor men can't. And so you create then a whole group of people, young men who don't have wives, can't afford wives, and who will be looking outside of their culture because, and women can't have the same equal rights when they're one of four. And so you say, well, we don't like polygamy for lots of just reasons, but it's a culture thing.
We keep getting a message that these things matter. They matter enormously. You know, these are the things that political battles are fought over. And we get politicians saying, you know, you need to endorse this vision we have for Australia. You know, it's got to be Australia first and foremost. Where do our priorities as Christians actually need to lie?
Yes, well, the Australia first and foremost is one of the most irritating things that is now coming out. Because when you're not allowed to have a culture like Christianity or Judaism, what is going to hold Australia together? I say it's money. The other alternative is jingoistic nationalism. I'm an Australian, that is what I am. It doesn't matter what you come back, it doesn't matter your background, provided you're an Australian, provided you wear the green and gold in your sporting outfits and sing Advance Australia Fair and stand up and salute the flag.
It doesn't happen often, but occasionally you will see Australian flags in front yards.
It's becoming that. More and more so.
Yep.
Now, in a previous generation, it was God and King and Empire and Nation. But you get rid of God, and lots of people don't want to have the King, and we don't belong to the Empire anymore, so there's only the Nation left. And so it's my nation, do or die. Well, who defines who the nation is? Politicians? If it's politicians, I don't think Australians want to be following the nation. Anyway, you keep changing them. Is it our history? Well, no, we've just chopped off our history. So it's whatever Australians do is good. Well, there are many things we've done which are so bad that you won't want to say that. I don't want to take my ethics and my principles of life from being an Australian. I'm not embarrassed about being an Australian. I'm very glad under God I am an Australian. It is a wonderful country with wonderful systems and wonderful culture and wonderful law. But no, God comes first, not Australia.
G.K. Chesterton once said, saying my country, right or wrong, is like saying my mother, drunk or sober.
Good, yes. He was very clever at those things, wasn't he?
Yes. And we do want our country, but we want it to be right. We want it to do the right thing by people and to have, you know, good laws and
etc. We want to call upon it to repent.
Yep.
And we want to be able to say, no, we've gone the wrong way. We shouldn't have done that. Let's turn back.
So if
the white Australia policy, which
was a bad idea. Yeah.
Which is assimilation in the extreme, hardly anybody wants to argue for now. Everyone wants to say that was a bad idea. But it was the Australian way for how long? 60, 70 years? It was the Australian way. Both Labor Party, Liberal Party, every government was for it.
Yes.
And it was wrong. So I don't want to be an Australian right or wrong. I want to be God's man first and foremost.
So what is the call for Christians to be? What is it that Christ's calling us to be? If it's not country first, what are we to be first?
It's got to be Christ first and his word, which will help us then see where our particular culture and where our nation fit. culture reinforces creation, generally. It reinforces it different ways. It's part of God's judgment on mankind that he has confused our languages so that we will never live in harmony with each other. But we need to understand what a Christian way of living would look like. And in as much as that's not being unfair on other citizens, call upon people to share it.
Quick final question. It must be sometimes uncomfortable, because if I'm putting Christ first and I can't put my culture first and my jingoism first, there are times I'm going to feel as though I'm out of step. There are times I'm going to feel as though I don't quite fit, aren't there?
Yes. If I fit with the world, then I'm not really Christian, because we follow the one that the world crucified. Therefore, I must expect my nation from time to time to be horrified with me, just as from time to time I must expect that I've got to call upon my nation to repent because they're going the wrong way.
So if the world hates us, we shouldn't be too distressed because it hated Christ first.
Exactly. That was what he said.
Well, there you are. A lot of stuff to think about. We have covered a big territory when you talk about something as big as multiculturalism. And this is something, as I say at the end of these programs, for you to keep thinking about and keep talking about. Talk to your family about it. Talk to your Bible study group about it. So chew over these things again that we've been talking about this time. There's a lot to talk about there. And we'll chat about something. And in 28 minutes, an enormous topic again next time. Philip Jensen, thank you for your company once again.
It's a pleasure, Kel.
And thank you for your company on the chat room. Always delighted to chat to you. And we look forward to your company again next time on the chat room.